Peter?
Well, I would say that we felt at the time that ActionAid or any NGOs could not guarantee that the aid that went, if they delivered it, would get to those people who needed it, if indeed they needed it in the first place.
Are you suggesting that they didn't need it?
Yes.
The people were eating enough?
We didn't take this decision lightly at all. I mean, it certainly, you know, it's not a question we were going to starve people to death for the sake of some political gain. And we were monitoring the situation very, very closely. As you know, I was in Conakry at the time. When we first went there, every evening we had a meeting in the hotel where I was staying of all the UN agencies, all the NGOs, all diplomatic missions used to meet to monitor what was going on. Throughout the day while I was there, I would be in telephone contact with a number of people inside Sierra Leone. I would be talking to them quite regularly. We would be in contact with all the people who were coming out from Sierra Leone. Throughout the 10 months we were there, people were continuing to come out. We were also in touch with other governments all around the world who were also monitoring it. So although I'm not saying we had an exact picture, I feel that certainly we probably had a better picture sitting in Conakry than anyone else did and how serious the situation was.
What kind of government did you perceive this to be? Brutal? Hopeless? What?
Well, initially we didn't perceive it as a government at all. And of course that's exactly what the Sierra Leone people said. They refused to acknowledge the junta as their government, as people will recall. I mean, it was an amazing time of civil society coming together. And they just refused to acknowledge the junta. The students refused to go to school. And as we all know, in Africa, education is one of the most important things to anybody.
But were they incompetent or brutal or both? What were they?
They were both. They were certainly incompetent. I mean, it was a joke, of course, every time they tried to form a government, they would name people as ministers and immediately we'd see those people appearing in Conakry who had the fear of death and wanting to be called a minister in the junta. They were also very brutal. There were endless examples of stories we were being told of the rebels going around, still hacking people's arms and legs off and killing them. But importantly, we were also monitoring very closely how serious the humanitarian situation was. And we even had a team come out in September of that year, European Union team, who collated all the available evidence that we had. And our conclusion was that, in general, there was no humanitarian crisis taking place in Sierra Leone. There was nobody dying of hunger in Sierra Leone. Yes, there was some evidence of malnutrition amongst some of the young children in Freetown. Yes, there was evidence of measles. But generally, there was not a humanitarian crisis which would not justify us having a different decision over whether we should start funding NGOs providing humanitarian aid.
Margie, did anybody die in Sierra Leone because of the food sanctions?
Our view was that the humanitarian situation was deteriorating after the coup. I mean, we're talking about one of the poorest countries in the world here. And, of course, the effect of an economic embargo is to make it much more difficult for food supplies to be transported around the country. And whilst I agree with Peter that it was difficult to have really detailed reports of what was happening, at the same time, there was information coming out of Sierra Leone at that time which showed malnutrition rates increasing. In the northern districts, malnutrition rates had increased to around 15% by the end of 1997. We had reports coming back from our local staff of people reducing their intake of food to, say, one meal a day, which is immediately a sign of distress. And there was a report that came out from, actually, UN Security Assessment, and I quote here, there were numerous corroborated reports of a significant increase in death due to malnutrition.
But do you know of any one person who died?
I'm not going to quote to you one or two people who died, because I don't think that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about an overall deterioration in the situation. And I think it is widely accepted that there was inevitably an increase in mortality, which accompanies an increase in malnutrition.
Could you have ignored the ban, just gone ahead and sent food aid in willy-nilly somehow?
Well, I think the point is that if you had resources in country, you could carry on distributing those resources, I mean, with great care to make sure that you minimise the chances of them being looted, that you reach the people who needed the relief. But I think what really concerned us was the UK government's decision to withhold humanitarian aid, which, as I was mentioning earlier, went against humanitarian principles, which indeed the UK government is signed up to in the Geneva Conventions. And the other thing that really concerned us was that the Department for International Development had only shortly before published what they called their 10 principles of humanitarianism. And one of them was to provide humanitarian aid on an impartial basis. And again, I can quote here, our help will seek to relieve civilian suffering without discrimination on political or other grounds, with priority given to the most urgent cases of distress. And we felt that this was a clear example of where aid was being withheld on political grounds, and that was in direct contradiction of humanitarian principles.
I wonder if there is some sense of self-interest in this, because you were receiving funding from the British government and, you know, it's your job. You have to get on with it. You don't have a job unless you're distributing aid.
I would refute that on a couple of reasons. It was an argument which was thrown around at the time.
Oh, really? They accused you of that? Some people did.
Well, it was when people were saying, is this really about Action Aid or is this really about the people of Sierra Leone?
Okay, yeah.
Then we actually refuted that very easily because we still did have some resources. So it's not that we were 100% dependent on aid from Department for International Development. But we were concerned with a point of principle here that humanitarian aid is supposed to be given unconditionally. That's what's in the Geneva Conventions. That's what's in international humanitarian law. And in this case, it was not happening. And that's what we were concerned about. And we were also concerned about it in the case of Sierra Leone. But as was this a precedent? Was this something that we were going to see from now on? And we felt that it had to be fought on those grounds, and we knew we had the backing of a lot of other UK NGOs in taking this stance.
Peter, you were breaking the Geneva Convention. That's the charge.
No, I think we're losing the wider picture here. As I say, all the available information we had was that there was not a humanitarian crisis. But more importantly, as I said right at the beginning, the worst humanitarian problem in Sierra Leone was the continuing existence of the junta and all the junta that was doing to the people, the human rights abuses, the atrocities. People were certainly dying. People were suffering, not from a lack of food or humanitarian supplies, but from the very evil and brutal regime that was continuing.
But
it was not just us who were saying this. I mean, an important part of our consideration in making all our decisions was to be guided by what the Sierra Leone people themselves were saying. And certainly all the Sierra Leone people that I was in touch with, as I say, and I was sort of speaking to them regularly every day on the telephone, I had endless streams of people coming out of Sierra Leone, they were very clear in their mind. They didn't want to see anything, the international community doing anything, to prolong the life of that junta
day. Peter, is it really, in the end, totally up to the Sierra Leonean people if there is a overall principle in the Geneva Convention that people should not be deprived of food aid?
I think it's more important principle involved that people have a right to sort of live in a peaceful and sort of humane way without a sort of an evil regime sort of bludgeoning them in the way that they were. And this clearly was the view of the people. I mean, I cite one example that happened to me, which, as you may know, during the sanctions, a tanker managed to get in providing some fuel. Now, up until then, there had been no fuel in the country, so therefore the people, particularly in Freetown, had been without electricity, they had been without vehicles running around, a pretty miserable existence added to their already miserable existence. You would have thought that when that tanker came in and suddenly for the first time for weeks, if not months, they suddenly had electricity, they would have been overjoyed. Not at all. My phone never stopped ringing that day from people in Freetown saying, what the hell is going on? You assured us you would impose the sanctions regime that would stop this fuel. Why didn't you stop this? Why did you allow that tanker to get in? Don't you realise this will just prolong the life of the junta?